on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to Laura Fox for driving it through the afternoon. I'm John Kenny. It's Monday, the 30th of May. This is Game On. Coming up today, Miguel Delaney, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley pick up the pieces from Saturday night's shocks on and off the pitch in Paris.
Casemiro now gets it out to Valverde. Benzema makes his move. He's got away from Konate. There's the shot.
In rugby, we've got Stephen Ferris on the other Champions of Europe as Ronan O'Gara excels with La Rochelle.
We have 79 minutes and 52 seconds gone. There's a point between the teams. La Rochelle by 22 to 21. Ehi West has a look at the score, at the clock as he kicks this one. It has gone straight between the posts. The referee, has he blown the full-time whistle? The referee has blown the full-time whistle. The place has absolutely erupted. Have snatched the victory at the very end of the game.
Plus, again, in football, we'll hear from Paddy Bradley and Barry Cahill on the provincial deciders as Derry roll back the years in Clonus. If you want to get in touch, you can send us a text on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
And you're very welcome. This is Monday night here on 2FM. And John in for, is it Marie or Shane? I'm not sure which one. Both. So, Alan Cawley's with me as well. Hi, Alan.
Evening, John. How are you?
Very, very, very good. We're going to start with football, obviously. And we got Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer, on with us to talk about the chaotic scenes we saw and marred Saturday's Champions League final at the Stade de France, coming under the spotlight at a meeting in Paris today. Miguel, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Were you there?
I was indeed. I got to the stadium about 5 hours beforehand, where you could already see there was congestion building, and certainly in contrast to the last time I'd been there, which was the Euro 2016 final, there was absolutely none of the same security logistics. For Euro 2016, there was this ring of steel around a huge perimeter. Absolutely none of that. In fact, in terms of that, it reminded me of Wembley 2020, or sorry, Wembley for the Euro 2020 final. Mm. When it really got bad, so like I suppose the way it worked with us, every newspaper there was given kind of three spots. So I suppose it was basically the division of labour. It was our northern correspondent, the UK Independent, Mark Critchley, who went down to the defences to report on what was happening there. Well, I was charged with getting on the phone and getting people in UEFA and the like. But I suppose for the last 48 hours, pretty much my job has been, and culminating the piece I did last night, has been, I suppose, trying to piece it all together. And I know there's been a lot of attention on the comments from the French sports minister today, following on from what the Interior Ministry said on Saturday night. But from talking to countless people at the game, and crucially, from talking to Football Supporters Europe, the federation who basically look after the interests of football fans across the continent, and have no vested interest here other than safety and these games being run correctly. And because of that, they are authorities on this. And as they put it, first of all, cheap old prejudices, and I quote, this is a quote from them, cheap old prejudices against Liverpool fans are being used for political purposes or to deflect criticism.
Yeah, because, secondly, sorry to cut across you there, Miguel, but what they're saying is, quote-unquote, industrial-level fraud, fake tickets for the problems that we're causing there. That's what they're saying, isn't it?
Well, I mean, even if that's true, and I think there are at least reasons to dispute some of... I mean, they said figures of 30,000 to 40,000. That's despite the fact that that would mean about 105,000 people around the stadium on Saturday night when on Saturday night, the gendarmerie told the CRS, who were in charge of a lot of the policing, like that only 95,000 people were in the vicinity. But secondly, the issue started way before even fake tickets could be checked or before this could be even quantified. Because from speaking to so many people there, where this actually started, and this points to the failure of logistics, failure of organisation, but it was basically, there was strike action on Orior B, one of the main train lines that was supposed to take Liverpool fans to the Stade de France. So had that train service been running normally, it would have meant the 19,000 Liverpool fans who had that allocation on their end, they would have had at least 16 corridors to get from the train stations towards the stadium. In this case, they only had four corridors. And that is where everything starts. That creates the congestion. Then by 7:30, when thousands of Liverpool fans are bottlenecked, they have to basically do away with ticket checks because they have to ease the flow. That then there are all sorts of accounts of local youths, you know, vaulting walls, trying to force their way in. And as the FSE put to me as well, chaos attracts chaos and bad actors get involved. And it did mean that thousands of responsibly behaving supporters, and let's not forget, this is actually at the Madrid end as well, because since then, so much has come out in Spain. But ultimately, responsibly behaving supporters felt the negatives of what was ultimately a poorly organised night.
It was, and there is a very good Sky News piece where the match is on and they show where the French police had put a van across below the concourse and narrowed the entrance for like 20,000 people down to, you get two or three people through it, and that started the backlog, didn't it? You saw that? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the authorities there have to respond to that, and they didn't respond. I mean, there's a wider context as well, which is basically that the French Football Federation, or really French football's response to a lot of civil unrest around football matches, it seems a Basque case by the rest of Europe. So at the moment, they have a situation where a lot of away fans aren't allowed the French game, which has taken a lot of experience from French authorities to deal with this. And on the ground, and again, it comes back to simple, basic things. Things actually go against, say, some of the recommendations in the Taylor report from 30 years ago, the one done in England, which is basically experienced police officers on the ground, plenty of communication. There was none of that. So say, even as a basic example there, there was no communication from inside the stadium or from any of the officials around it to tell the waiting fans that the game had been delayed. They only found that out because fans came out and told them. There are so many multiple little things that you can point to that add up to what was chaos. And I think the least of them, really, in this case, is any sort of issue with fans. And again, I should stress that FSE, again, the quotes they put to me were basically, yes, there were fake tickets. Yes, there were. Fans trying to bunk in, or ticketless fans trying to get in. But these are issues at every single major final with every single club, because that's the nature of these events. That's why they need to be so rigorously organised and policed. Whereas in this case, they weren't there. And also, it was put to me that actually some of these issues were actually less than previous finals or pre-COVID finals. So it's why so many people are asking questions of some of the statements coming out from the French state today.
And what was it like as a media representative there, working for the media for the London Independent? What was it like for you? What was your experience?
I must say it was just actually my 14th Champions League final, going back to when I used to work for the Sunday Tribune. It's generally the event, the football event you look forward to most of the year, not least because of the kind of the setting for it, the circumstances. And this was just completely soured. It was actually very difficult to concentrate on the start of the game because of the realisation that the story was now elsewhere. It had been something else. And let's not forget as well in this web that this is basically the third UEFA final now that has had some pretty significant problems. All for different reasons, yes. So you had the Euro 2020 final last July. You had the Europa League final 2 weeks ago, in which a lot of people there said could have come quite close to some very, very problematic issues. And now you have this. And the cause of them, or some of the circumstances, are very different, but there's still commonalities, which are the failure of organisation. That could be for all sorts of reasons. It could be kind of, you know, where they're held, as I've pointed to the French context there. It could be an adjustment after the pandemic. But certainly, UEFA actually need to have a serious look at this. And they had a meeting today with the French state and some of the stakeholders involved. But there are obviously demands for an investigation because, I mean, it's ludicrous in 2022 that a marquee, a global mega event that the Champions League final is, that can be delayed for 35 minutes because there isn't sufficient organisation around the stadium.
Yeah. If you were there, actually, text us 51552, 51552. Alan, I presume you watched it and saw the chaos going on your screen.
Absolutely, John, yeah. And we were only kind of being drip-fed information, I suppose, because of the advent of Twitter now, and that's how you follow it almost. But I was reading some really credible people's accounts, and it sounded like absolute chaos, as Miguel has outlined, and worrying as well, John. I'm I suppose, the only saving grace is that we're not kind of hearing about people being badly hurt or injured, because it sounded like an absolute disaster in terms of the organisation of it. And sadly, as Miguel said, that like, we all look forward to the Champions League final. It's such a showcase event. We were so looking forward to two brilliant teams going at it, and for the first 25 minutes, half an hour, you were thinking, is everybody safe and is everybody okay? So it was pretty sad.
Sure. Where do they go from here then, Miguel?
So next year is actually in Istanbul, which had problems the last time it was to the final, because it was so, the transportings were so remote. Although, I mean, the infrastructure around the stadium was very different at that point. But really, it's on, like, I mean, the talk within UEFA today, the phrase we're using was, if, brackets, when we have an investigation. So it does feel like there'll be something quite significant to this game, into this game. And I suppose where we go from there then is there's huge pressure for UEFA's next event to be run correctly. Now, they've actually got a big one in London in 2 days' time, which is the Finalissima at Wembley, which is between the winners of the last European Championships, Italy, and the last Copa America, Argentina. And I suppose just because of the nature of it, because it is almost a glorified friendly, it's not going to be as intense as a European finals. They're not going to attract the same people. But certainly there'll be a pressure on it to pass off smoothly. And for UEFA to really address a lot of this, for next May's finals.
Yeah, I just want to go back. Before you, because I know you're under pressure here yourself as well, Melby Miguel. But they've had big events since COVID came to an end, in terms of bringing crowds into grounds. They've had big events in that stadium. Rugby is the perfect example during the Six Nations. Full stadia, no problem. Why is it just about the football?
Well, I mean, as all this was unfolding on Saturday, I had people on to me about the rugby game actually didn't pass off that smoothly. That when Irish fans went there, they would be, because of the inefficiency of ticket checks, that someone got on to me, someone basically tweeted me this on Saturday. Yeah. It was the same as the Six Nations game in February. Ticket checks and body search and gender, segregation for that. Maybe six checkers for men, one for women, and thousands upon thousands trying to get in. We got there 45 minutes before kickoff and missed kickoff. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's that smooth.
Yeah.
But again, and like, with the greatest respect, there is kind of nothing like a Champions League final, given the intensity of the event. Like, it does demand a different level of organisation.
Of course it does. Yeah, but really, you know, if this is going on persistently, they really need to look at places like that as a venue and how it's run.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, what struck me for a while, and it even struck me in Euro 2016, we're actually going right back to the Thierry Henry handball. I feel like the Stade de France is, I mean, it was built in, completed in 1998 for that World Cup. And at the time, it felt like the first new stadium of a new era, and felt quite space age. I think it increasingly feels like the last stadium of an old era, because there's so much around the area,
yes,
around the transport infrastructure, that is actually quite out of date. And it's a problematic venue in a few ways.
And of course, transport is a problem, because there are lightning and cat strikes, isn't there? A lot in Paris.
Yeah. And usually this is one of the things that usually comes into it when you stage these events, that like you try and bring people to the table, so unions sign, or at least there is agreements that there won't be strike action on this because of the chaos it can cause, and because in case like this it can cause. And again, this is obviously not to do down the reasons for people striking, which is obviously absolutely justified.
Yes.
But it's about the state and the stakeholders being able to mitigate these circumstances so they don't become issues and cause the chaos that it does for events that really need rigorous organisation.
All right, listen, Miguel Delaney, who is the chief football writer with the London Independent, thanks for his views on those chaotic scenes which marred Saturday's Champions League final. Glad to say Stephen Kelly, former Irish international, is on the line as well. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, John, you well?
Very, very good. We're going to move things on. There's a few bits and pieces obviously coming up. We've got the Nations League restarting this weekend. Ireland playing against Armenia. I know we're travelling together to Yerevan. Looking forward to the trip.
Yes, it'd be a nice one. We'd be together for a while, John. I think we'd be together for a while.
Exactly, exactly. They were training today, actually, the Republic of Ireland squad. Let's see what Callum Robinson had to say to Tony O'Donoghue.
We all played for 80 minutes yesterday against the 21s, and a good 21 side, so it's nice to get the legs going. But I think after a good week of training, we should be fine and ready to go.
No, Armenia are probably the weakest team in our group, if you want to put it that way. You'd want a good start.
Yeah, definitely. You can say the weakest, but I've been involved in a lot of international games now, and no team is weak, weaker even, because they'll have a lot of quality still at the same time, so we need to make sure that we prepare right for it. And they said it could become a really important game for us as it goes on in the Nations League.
Last time you went to that part of the world, of course, was Azerbaijan. That was a special day for you and for Ireland and for Stephen Kenny, indeed, because it was such an important victory.
Yeah, it was a massive game, to be fair. Any result that ends 3-0 away from home is a good achievement, but it was good. It got us got a good away win for us, and we kicked on from then as well. So, hopefully we can go to that neck of the woods again and get another 3-0 win.
You followed it up with a hat-trick. I mean, that was a difficult preparation for you. There was a lot of controversy around you at the time. But do you think you use it to your advantage in a way?
Yeah, I just let my football do the talking and just try to help the team, basically. And I was able to do that, as you said. The week going into it wasn't like the best, but the lads stuck by me, and then I obviously wanted to produce on the pitch, and I felt like I'd done that.
Callum Robinson there talking to Tony O'Donoghue. The match kicks off at 2 o'clock Irish time this coming Saturday. You can hear it live on RTE Radio 1 and also see it live on RTE Television. They have the rights to it now. Alan, Stephen, how do you think the match is going to go? Alan first.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, John. It's such a busy period now because I think it's 4 games in the space of 10-11 days. Obviously, the lads have finished up their seasons as well, so there's been a bit of a break in terms of 2 or 3 weeks. Some of them have had off, so some of them only came into camp, I think, yesterday, and we're obviously training today as well. Callum Robinson mentioned the fact that they played a little kind of mini friendly with the 21s as well, and of course they have big games coming up, the 21s. So I think for all of us interested, obviously, and so many of us are, in terms of the Irish team and how we want to see them develop and get on, the previous results up to now have gone quite well, but this is the first time now that Stephen has had proper competitive games in quite a while. So I think it's important that we pick up where we left off in terms of the momentum that he's built up and get results as well, John. Like, I think Stephen has passed the stage in terms of trying to say, well, we've changed the culture and we've changed the philosophy and we've changed the way we want to play and we've introduced new players. I think people want to see proper results in competitive matches now, and he's quietly confident about the group as well. Obviously, as Tony suggested in his question, that maybe this is the easier of the games. I think they're all difficult games, especially the travelling away as well, and close proximity of the games to be held. But I think, to be fair, they're quietly confident, the group. Obviously, Scotland have a big playoff game with Ukraine Wednesday as well, so we'll get a look at those. But I think in terms of ourselves and focusing on the Nations League, I think Stephen's quietly confident about this group.
Yeah, Stephen. Kelly, what do you know about Armenia? As Tony suggested there too, Callum Robinson is one of the easier teams in the group. Do we know much about them?
No, they're definitely going to be of all the teams we're playing against, they're the ones you fanciest to pick up the most points against. But there's still a difficult place to go. It's not going to be easy conditions, weather conditions getting out there. It's a long travel, it's a long flight.
It's going to be very hot.
It's going to be very hot. And the lads have been off for a few weeks as well, so it's getting the legs going. So, you know, it's nice to hear they had a leg game against the 21s just to dust off any cobwebs from the guys that have finished up a bit sooner. But it's really important, I think, you know, to build on what we've done up to this now. Stephen's, you know, the fans are on board, everybody seems to be back in favour for what's going on, what he's been doing on the pitch, the results have been coming in, but now it's making a count in a qualifying campaign and something that actually means something. So in the Nations League, where we're in a position to try and qualify for a competition or put a stake down, so I think now it's when, you know, he's got some good grace now, but it's really important that we get off to a good start, because, you know, Scotland's a difficult match, Ukraine's a difficult match. These are not going to be easy games, so you need to make sure you have 3 points going into them with a bit of a, a bit of confidence from the side, knowing that they're starting off a campaign well. And I think, you know, not going to be easy going where we're going, but it's definitely doable and something that the lads can go and get off to a good start.
Yeah, these games obviously are now competitive and they march you onto something. I don't know quite what it is at the moment, but
that's the problem.
Exactly. It gets rid of the international friendly, so at least they are competitive.
Oh, it's been a really positive introduction, I think, these Nations League games as well, especially for even lesser countries trying to develop, John, playing games against teams of a similar standard, similar ability, and obviously gaining some confidence from that. So I think, to be fair, I think it's been a really good introduction to the calendar of these Nations League games, as you said, rather than playing meaningless friendlies. So it does mean a lot. As I said, Stephen will be judged on this now in terms of the competitive side of it, and people want to see that progression that we've seen already, not just in terms of seeing how they play, but progression into tournaments and stuff like that. And Stephen wants that himself as well, John, to be fair.
Sure.
He's his harshest critic, and he wants to achieve and wants to do well. So I'm looking forward to the next kind of couple of weeks, and obviously the club football is finished, so concentrate on the international stuff.
Absolutely, for the next couple of weeks. Now, we just talked to Miguel Delaney about the chaotic scenes which marred the Champions League final. But what about the game itself, Stephen? What did you make to it?
You really feel like it was a missed opportunity for Liverpool in the first half, especially. They played really well and they had some really great chances. Obviously, Courtois was outstanding. It was a real sense that if they don't get a goal here, with what Real Madrid have done all year, you know they weren't out of it. Even if it was 2-0 down at halftime, it wouldn't have come out of it. So to be in the position they were at halftime, not taking those chances, you knew Real were going to have a spell. They've got the quality of players. And I just think some of the performances from Real, individual performance, were absolutely outstanding. And Ancelotti nailed some of his position, like Vivaldi on the right wing, and Carvalho, I thought was absolutely unbelievable. Carvajal, the right back, I thought he was outstanding. His performance was, you look at his age, the energy he put in, he was driven, he was so dogged. And then defensively, they were excellent. Courtois was brilliant. And then in the second half, Modric came into play, Cruz came into play, those players, Casemiro, just dictated the game and the play. And in the end, I think they were deserved winners. But you just feel like for the matchups that Ancelotti went with were absolutely brilliant, and his tactical nous, and then bringing on Camavinga in the end, I know he's done that throughout most of the campaign, but you just kind of feel Liverpool missed opportunities in the first half, and they couldn't capitalise, and they knew that Real were going to come back into it. But like I said, some of the individual performances from Real I thought were outstanding.
Yeah, an individual goalkeeper as well. Courtois was absolutely outstanding. I was in awe of it. I thought it was a fantastic display.
I knew you'd appreciate that, John. Yeah,
nice height for the keeper.
He was outstanding, Courtois. He had one of those, the game of his life, I suppose. And interesting quotes coming from him afterwards as well, speaking about he needed a game like that almost to gain kind of global credibility.
And respectability. Yeah, exactly.
To be fair to him. So he was very honest in that regard, but he was outstanding. I would agree with Stephen on the individuals. I spoke here Friday night thinking about Ancelotti's two decisions I felt he had to make, one into the game, and one was Carvajal. I wasn't sure whether he'd play him, because we've seen the impact Diaz has had, and he's been so good and electric down that left hand side. And I thought the option was to maybe go with Vasquez just to cope with Diaz's pace, but Carvajal was absolutely outstanding. And I think Valverde, for me, only for Courtois, who saved all the shots, I think Valverde would have got man of the match. His energy levels up that right hand side was absolutely phenomenal. So the other one as well I suggested was Cruz. I felt maybe because of the mileage on the clock, and himself and Casemiro and Modric have been so good, that I wasn't sure he'd get away with the three of them against Liverpool's midfield, that maybe go with two of them and Camavinga. But the three of them were absolutely amazing. And Cruz, to be fair, he was the one I thought that may miss out. Now, he's a phenomenal player, but I just felt the energy side of things, that he may get caught out, and Camavinga's energy would have been far better suited. But they lasted the pace and they were phenomenal, and they deserve huge credit as well, John. I think that's their fifth Champions League medal, those three. It's phenomenal, really. And when you think of Real Madrid as a club, the history, it's unbelievable. That's their 14th time to win. I think it's their fifth in the last 10 years as well. It's just incredible, and more so even this year when you think of the teams in the previous rounds had them beaten out the door, and yet the ability to just hang in. And it was almost indicative of what we've seen in the previous rounds, the final on Saturday, because Liverpool totally dominating possession, creating chance after chance, but Madrid had that unbelievable ability just to hang in and hang in and hang in, and then when the opportunity came, took the goal. I felt it was harsh, people criticising Trent. Stephen will know as well, and I'd be interested on his view. it's very hard to deal with that. It's a cross-come shot. It's not even, it's not a cross picking out the winger at the left, at the back post. It's a cross-come shot. I felt Trent was in the right position. It's very, very, it's almost impossible to deal with that, John. So I felt that was a bit harsh, people blaming him. But Real Madrid, yeah, fair play to them. It was phenomenal.
Yeah. Stephen, a quick word about Notts Forest. Yeah. That's a heck of a jump, isn't it, from nearly bottom of the league at the start of the season under Chris Hughton. My brother was in tears yesterday. He's a huge Big Forest fan, so delighted for him. What did you make to it yesterday? I think Huddersfield might be feeling a little bit aggrieved that they didn't get a penalty or two in that game.
Yeah, they had a couple of situations that you think VAR could have come in and really saved them, but and they played well. Huddersfield put them to test, but Forest, to go on the run they've gone on, I think it's one of those teams that if you're a neutral, everybody kind of wants to see Forest back. They've been knocking on the door for so long, they've just not gotten there in here. And I think from Irish perspective, Stephen Reid, Andy Reid, all involved that club there now on a coaching basis. You know, it's a fantastic story for us for to have people at that level kind of be coaching in the Premier League, you know, with top-notch players now. And, you know, I remember having a Brian Roy jersey for Forest when I was a kid back in the day. Just one of these teams that you used to like, you know, Stan Collingwood, all these players and the jump out, even Roy Keane playing for them. So I think it's someone, and it's a monstrous club. Like, I've played against them a few times in the Championship with likes of Birmingham. It's always been a bit of a derby around here, and you always just feel like it's just a sleeping joint. Matt, like, you talk about European Cups back to back for them back in the day with Martin O'Neill when he was playing for them, and you kind of feel like it's a team that deservedly, as stature wise, you know, deserves to be in the Premier League, and it's only going to add to that fairy tale that is up there. So, you know, delighted for them to be back up. They were probably lucky. The decisions could have gone against them and probably should have, but you know what, sometimes it's just about being there, right place, right time, and they're back now, which is great. Hopefully they can put up a good fight and, you know, try and stay in the Premier League next year as well.
Alright, well, listen, thanks for joining us, Stephen. Get to the airport early, don't forget it's an early flight to Armenia.
Yeah, I will, thanks.
All the best, Stephen.
Just bring carry on luggage, apparently. Don't go
bothered. I just thought to the Aviva games.
Cheers, Alan. Thanks.
Let's see you on the airport. Thanks very much. Other piece of football news today. Robert Lewandowski has confirmed his Bayern Munich career is over after 8 years at the club. Where's he going, do you think?
Wow. I didn't see that, John. I know there was speculation, but I thought he'd see out his career there.
No, he's failed to agree to contract extension beyond next summer. Wonder where he'll go.
Man U.
You doubt it.
They could do with four Lewandowskis.
Exactly, yeah, at the back. And Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich's 19-year tenure as Chelsea owner is over. Todd Boehly has completed his £4.25 billion sterling purchase of the club following a protracted process. So no more Abramovich at Stamford Bridge. Anna's going to stay with us. We're going to talk some rugby after this break.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Rugby.
We have 79 minutes and 52 seconds gone. There's a point between the teams. La Rochelle by 22 to 21. Ehi West has a look at the score, at the clock as he kicks this one. It has gone straight between the posts. The referee, has he blown the full-time whistle? The referee has blown the full-time whistle. The place has absolutely erupted, and La Rochelle have snatched the victory at the very end of the game.
What an incredible finish that was, too, as Leinster missed out to Ronan O'Gara's Rochelle. They scored a try and converted it in the very last seconds of the game. Stephen Ferris, ex-Ulster in Ireland, watched the game and is with us now. Good evening to you, Stephen.
Good evening.
What did you make to it all? I wouldn't be the biggest rugby fan of the world. I do a lot of commentaries on GAA and soccer, but I was enthralled by it. I thought it was an outstanding game of rugby.
It was indeed. Well, I'm happy that Derry got the result over Donegal in the Gaelic football, so I'm happy enough about that, but I wasn't so happy about the rugby. I'm going to be honest with you, it was a complete shock to me. It was a shock to a lot of fans. I didn't see it coming. And I'm not sure the Leinster players seen it coming either. That's maybe my take on it. I just don't think the Leinster boys turned up. You know, they weren't at their best, and somehow they still nearly won the game. And La Rochelle just had a little bit more in the tank. 60% possession. Take away the first 10 minutes of the game when Leinster looked like they were going to score on a couple of occasions. La Rochelle were the better side, and for me, they deserved the win. I also thought at scrum time. You know, Wayne Barnes was pretty good all afternoon, but I think at scrum time there was a little bit more dominance for La Rochelle than he maybe thought. But all in all, what an entertainment, what an advertisement for European rugby. It was absolutely brilliant. The game the night before, Lyon versus Toulon in the Challenge Cup, wasn't much to talk about, but by goodness, we got a heck of a game on the Saturday afternoon.
You certainly did. The one thing that Leinster, they didn't cross the try line. I mean, they kicked all their points while La Rochelle got three tries themselves. And early in the game as well, they set a marker down, didn't they, by Leinster got the first possession and La Rochelle were able to scramble the ball clear. They were very good in that in those ruck situations and ripping the ball away from Leinster.
Yeah, they were. They, you know, Ronan Lagares said post game in his interview that he had seen enough out of a couple of games. One of them being the Leicester game, especially in the second half. He was able to pull enough out of those couple of games to have an impact on his side on the way he was going to, you know, the tactical blueprint that he was going to put on his side for the game. A rush defence coming up really, really hard. You know, La Rochelle are a team full of big, big, strong men, and you know, they knock Leinster back time after time. And you know, I think Leinster got caught behind the game line on numerous occasions. And it's just not like them. I think we're just so used to seeing Leinster throw the ball around. You know, at the Viva Stadium, putting on 40 points against, you know, the reigning champions Toulouse, and everybody thinks it's going to be exactly the same. But La Rochelle, you know, the heart that they showed, I thought they were actually, you know, going to run out of steam towards the end, and I think maybe Leinster were hoping the exact same, but if anything, they smelt a little bit of blood towards the last 10 minutes and just kept the foot on the accelerator and went after them, and the ball spilled out of the side of the ruck and it was picked up and the try was scored, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of disappointed Leinster fans. But you got to give credit, John, to Ronan O'Gara, to Donegal Ryan, two monster men I know, but a job really well done. They sniffed out everything that Leinster threw at them.
That was, I thought, an amazing piece of rugby towards the end where they tried to batter down the Leinster try line, and wave after wave was repelled consistently, except for when the try went in, because there was just that momentary slip, wasn't there, before Denny picked up the ball, and that may have contributed to the fact that he was able to then squirm under the body of the Leinster players and get the ball down.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, if there's a pass that doesn't go to hand and, you know, it bounces up, it generally bounces up and you can kind of make a few yards, or, you know, it kind of throws the defence off. And I think it was Gary Ringrose went to make the tackle, but just the way that moment in the game happened, it was just a little bit of luck for La Rochelle. But I tell you what, it was a really good finish. He had to reach out, put the ball on the just on the edge of the line, and get downward pressure, and it wasn't really with his hand, it was with his wrist. So a really good try, brilliant try, but it was all the hard work of more or less the pack that was in front of him, banging the line, as you rightly say, that blue wall, who I thought were tremendous for most of the game, were very resilient, but it just creaked at the wrong time, and you know, a few of their big key players were off the pitch at that stage also, and unfortunately there wasn't enough time left on the clock for Leinster to restart and try and get maybe a drop goal or a try of their own to try and win it.
Yeah, and La Rochelle, have to remember it as well, they played 10 minutes of that second half as well with a player in the sin bin, so you got to give them extra credit for that too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was really impressed with La Rochelle. Their semi-final, I think that's why everybody had Leinster such big favourites, because that game didn't flatter at all, and you know, La Rochelle could easily have lost that, and they didn't. They found a way, and they couldn't play any worse than they did in that semi-final, and they rocked up. They turned up a team full of big men, and, you know, sizes win prizes. That's what I've been saying all week, is, you know, just the likes of Will Skelton in the second row, 130, 40 kegs, you know, 6'9". Oh, he played 80 minutes after only managing 15 minutes the previous week and been out injured for a couple of months previous to that. So, you know, huge shifts by a lot of men in there. A few guys like Bodia, who have been with La Rochelle since they got promoted in 2014. You know, he has come through the whole journey with La Rochelle, and now they find themselves as European champions. But yeah, I was really, really impressed with 1-23, and especially the tactics that Ronan O'Gara went with. Because, you know, I think everybody was expecting this, myself included, this slow, lethargic, pragmatic game to try and wear them down. It was La Rochelle that played most of the rugby.
He did, yeah. Scoring the three tries, it tells its own story as well. But it's amazing. That's their first major trophy, up promoted, and two Munster men get them over the line, metaphorically and metaphysically as well. A lot of credit to O'Gara.
Yeah, definitely. I sent him a text. I've seen the blue ticks, but he hasn't responded just yet. he might actually still be in a bar somewhere,
probably,
having a few pints. Him and Donegh Ryan both celebrating. But, you know, congratulations to them. And I tell you what, like, that is some feat. He is just taking over as director of rugby at La Rochelle. You know, this is his first full season, and he has managed to take home the European Cup. Like, that is just extraordinary. It really, really is. Managing a group of players, you know, managing a few egos, I'm sure, as well, in that La Rochelle team. There's a few stars sprinkled amongst some of the other names that I mentioned. So, yeah, you know, it's brilliant for him. It's brilliant for his family. He's travelled the world with his coaching career. But I'm sure if you asked Ronan O'Gara about it, he would give all the praise to the players that took the pitch, because they really did put in a hell of a shift.
They certainly did. Thanks very much. That's Stephen Ferris there on that dramatic game, with La Rochelle scoring in the last couple of minutes of that game to take it away from Leinster. Before we go into the break, we're going to talk Gaelic football after that. Already we were talking about Ireland playing in the UEFA Nations League this coming Saturday in Armenia. Well, there's our boxes already there in Armenia. And congratulations to two boxers today. Dylan Eagleson has lost, sadly, to France's Bilal Banama in the bantamweight final, but he does get a silver. But congratulations to Galway's Gabriel Dusan, who has beaten England's Lewis Richardson in his final, and he's picked up a gold medal in the European Championships. So our boxers are showing really the way, both men and women, over the last couple of weeks. Congratulations to both of those.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now. Game on 2FM.
That's John Kenny in tonight. Actually, I'm here tomorrow as well. Ruby will be joining me then as well. And we're hoping to get Barry Cahill pretty shortly to talk about the weekend's Gaelic football matches and the four provincial finals. But just having a little trouble getting him up on the line. So Alan is still with us. We can talk about League of Ireland. I was at Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne on Friday. High expectation that Shelves might have done something in that game, having won four on the spin before they came in. And lo and behold, Rovers score after 66 seconds. Game over.
And it was all very comfortable, I believe, John.
Yeah, very, very comfortable indeed as well. Shells tried their hardest, but they're just not in that same league as well. And it shows, like, Shamrock Rovers had lost to Drogheda the week before. They shook that off and won comfortably. And with teams below them, like Derby City, not picking up points now as they should, they're starting to stretch away.
Well, we're halfway through. Obviously, they're in the mid-season break at the moment now, John.
Which has been extended.
Yes.
Yes, because of the international call-ups.
Yeah.
All the games, bar, I think it's the Finn Harps match, are all off on the 10th and 11th of June because of the international call-ups. So they get a 2-week break now, actually.
They do, yeah. And look, some clubs will be delighted with that. The lesser squads as such, and the smaller squads that may have a few injuries, but the likes of maybe Shamrock Rovers want to carry on the momentum. As you say, they got beat last Monday, a surprise result against Drogheda, but they bounce back like champions do on Friday night. And to be fair to Shelburne, John, even though they're on a good run, I think it was four on the bounce, they've really turned the corner under Damien Duff and jumped right up the table to mid-table. They're very much a work in progress.
Yeah.
And it was a new squad, as we knew at the start of the season, that was going to take time. And maybe we saw some of the fruits of that over the last 3 or 4 weeks with them picking up the wins. But it was a tough ask to go to Tallaght and try and beat Shamrock Rovers, especially the fact that they had been beaten. So you were expecting more of a reaction from them. And we saw that, as you said, after 66 seconds. I was in UCD watching UCD and Sligo Rovers, John, and if you think that game that you were at wasn't great,
I thought it was a good game, actually. So there.
Well, just in terms of the fact you're the
comparison, I'm getting you.
Yeah, or the fact that you thought maybe it was over after 66 seconds. I would have taken a game being over after 66 seconds than watch what I watched.
Well, and what's happened to Sligo Rovers? They started the season so well, and now they've stepped away and they've sacked their manager.
Yeah,
on mutual consent.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, obviously they've changed the manager, and John Russell stepped into the breach again, going back to the fixtures last Monday night. They picked up a great result, got a bit of a bounce against Derry, beating Derry at home, but then they were very, very disappointing against UCD on Friday night. And I think it's a case you go across the league, John. There's four or five teams who are all in the hunt for those European positions, but they're also inconsistent. And Sligo are very much one of those. Bohemians are another one. St. Patrick's Athletic, all up and down, and nobody can put a run together at all. And we've just seen, as I said, with Shelburne picking up four wins on the bounce, how much you can jump up the table. The surprise package for me really has been Dundalk. Stephen O'Donnell, who I felt going to
quietly gone about the business and up to second now.
Absolutely. And he was one, and I was I remember texting him even thinking, Stephen, are you mad going back to Dundalk? Because we all seen the trouble they had last year. He was what I felt onto a good thing with St. Patrick's Athletic, having finished second in the league
and win the cup.
Winning the cup as well, and building a team, building a squad that was maybe capable of challenging Shamrock Rovers. For him to leave that, and I know he has obviously a personal affiliation with Dundalk as well, I felt he was mad, but he's going about his business very, very well, John. And they've jumped up to second place now. Obviously they're 8 points behind Shamrock Rovers. I felt at the start of the season, if they were to finish in those European positions, that would be brilliant. I never had them challenging, but the position to find themselves in now, all credit must go to Stephen O'Donnell.
A quick word about the game in the first division there, Cork against Galway. It wasn't a great game, I hear, but a big crowd, and you know the interest, the crowds are certainly back, and it was a sellout pretty much at Rovers game, Shamrock Rovers game on Friday night as well.
Yeah, well, Cork and Galway were getting brilliant crowds, especially for the first division, and you would nearly want the two of them to get promoted. Obviously, one will go up as champions, but then the other in the playoff. But that was a huge result for Cork. Colin Healy with a very young side, but going about his business very, very well also, John. But you nearly want the two of them to get promoted, because we need as big a geographical spread around the country.
Yeah, because the team furthest south in the Premier Division of the SSC Attritional League is Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, so we need representation, obviously, in Waterford, and they've been on a decent run recently as well. Also Cork, we need to get them back into the Premier Division, and even Galway as well, so hopefully that'll be the case. But they're fighting it out at the moment in the First Division.
Alright, let's go on to Gaelic Games, and the four provincial finals took place over the weekend. There was two blowouts on Saturday, Kerry and Dublin in their respective finals. A bit closer in the game down in Pearse Stadium in Galway yesterday. There was only 3 points in the end, but Galway really had the game wrapped up a long time before they conceded two late goals. But the real drama happened in Clonus, as Derry came from behind to beat Donegal in extra time. This is how it was unfolded. In fact, in a second, we'll be getting the thoughts of the former Dublin footballer Barry Cahill. But Damien Lawler has been catching up with the Derry football legend and current under 20 manager Paddy Bradley to see how the senior team beat Donegal yesterday.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
They're working the ball out to the 45, and here come Derry again, full of energy in the closing stages. They're all breaking forward. The game is over. Oisín McWilliams had the ball, and he sinks to his knees in celebration. We've been watching Derry boys making history. They are the Ulster football champions for the first time in 24 years, and there's no Stewart and Clonus going to be able to stop this pitch invasion. They're coming in over the railings and through the gates. The red and white flags are waving, and what an incredible run it's been by Derry this season. They've taken out Tyrone, they've taken out Monaghan, and after extra time, they've taken out Donegal.
Quick comment. As you can maybe tell by the sound of the voice, pretty hoarse here from all the shouting they done yesterday, and obviously a big night celebrating. It's been a long time coming. I thought Derry were brilliant yesterday. Probably didn't reach the heights that they did against either Tyrone or Monaghan. Maybe didn't play as well, but yesterday it was all about getting the job done. And yesterday was a day for, I suppose, big players to stand up. I thought obviously Brendan Rodgers, a good man of the match, was excellent. I did a few podcasts this week. I talked about the influence he could have on the team. I was really surprised that Donegal didn't really put him in the back foot, put him to the edge of the square, and maybe put Michael Murphy there and put a lot of high ball in. He was really, really dominant. Obviously kicked 3 points, and he was sort of the platform for most of Derry's attacks. He was exceptional. Chris McKay again renewed his, I suppose, battles with Paddy McBurdy, and I thought he well out on top of that, and he was excellent too. The likes of Conrad Lass obviously kicked the winning score, was exceptional in extra time. Shane McGuigan, well, he didn't contribute maybe as much as he usually does on the scoreboard. Like, he was back defending, working hard. The likes of Ethan Conor Doherty getting on a lot of ball. So look, it was a real tense finish to the game. Look, it's long overdue, and fair play to the management team and to the players. They were exceptional yesterday.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
I can hear Paddy Bradley's hardly got any voice there. That's him speaking to Damien Lawler. Barry Cowell, ex-Dublin footballer. There's one thing about the four provincial finals, and I was in Pier Stadium on Sunday. Two of them were blowouts on Saturday, and it took, well, I think it was something like 11 minutes for the first score to be registered in the Ulster final as well. So is the provincial finals used to be the big thing. Now they're not anymore, really, except for maybe Ulster. Although it did make lots of Galway yesterday, I would have said, I have to say it.
Yeah, no, you'd have to say that the Connacht Championship is very competitive. I mean, you have three Division 1 teams there in the mix, and there's been a good spread of counties amongst Galway, Roscommon and Mayo having won it over the last sort of 10 years or so. But yeah, certainly Ulster is really the championship, the provincial championship of focus for a lot of people within the GAA because it is so competitive. Derry were the fourth different Ulster champion over the last 4 years and very well deserving of that. As was mentioned there, they did it the hard way, beating the All-Ireland champions in their home ground and then beating Monaghan and obviously Donegal yesterday. It wasn't a great spectacle.
No, it was a hard watch. It was a hard watch, all right.
Yeah, but it was still interesting in the fact that it was very tight. There was a lot at stake and obviously the Derry factor in terms of them, you know, not having won it in 24 years. I think there was a lot of interest in it and obviously it went to extra time as well. But essentially both teams really cancelled each other out because they pretty much went with 15 men behind the ball, which made, you know, scores hard to come by and there was very few goal chances in the match. But I think Derry deservedly edged it in the end, even though there wasn't much between them.
Yeah. So one thing about provincial finals though is that if the GAA insists that we keep playing provincial finals in the likes of Leinster, in Munster as well. I'm talking about football here.
Yeah.
Is that people start voting with their feet. I know, and I live down there in Kildare, a lot of Kildare supporters went up with a lot of expectation and they were blown out in the first couple of minutes. And, you know, if you've got to see your team getting beaten by that, people will vote with their feet, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I was in Croke Park myself on Saturday. Obviously delighted that Dublin won, which was expected. But yeah, there was a poor attendance at the game. I'd say it was less than 30,000 in the stadium, which is far from ideal. And I think the provincial championships, they have lost their luster over the last number of years. In my opinion, it's probably the third most important competition now behind, obviously, the All-Ireland Series and also the National League.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something you need to look at about bringing that competition.
And the league was the poor cousin for so long, wasn't it? But now it's garnering more interest because all the four divisions are playing with the counties that are all at the same level.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the Munster Championship and the Leinster Championship has gone, you know, a fair bit down in standard over the last number of years. There's just a massive gap to Kerry and obviously to Dublin as well. And those blowout victories don't really do anything for anyone. It doesn't do anything for Dublin or Kerry. And it certainly doesn't do anything in terms of motivation or appetite amongst the other counties as well. I suppose the introduction of the Tachin Cup is definitely welcomed and will benefit a lot of the teams in the Division 3 and Division 4. But I think in those two particular provinces at the moment, it looks broken and I can't see a real fix for it.
Yeah, if you keep tinkering around the edges of it, that's what you're going to get, I suppose. But John Mahon, I've spoken to him, the Offaly manager. They got New York and they're going to play the next weekend in Tullamore. He says his county are embracing the Tachin Cup and anybody else I've heard of managing teams in the Tachin Cup say they're embracing it too because it's at that level. It's at the right level, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, these teams are playing counties of equal standing, of the same type of calibre of player and panel. And I think the Tachin Cup has had a really good start and I think it's only going to get better. You have the quarterfinals coming up next weekend and the beauty about the draw that took place this morning, all eight teams in that quarterfinals will fancy themselves in their particular game. And once you win that game, you're into the semi-finals, which is in Croke Park and it's live on telly. So there's a real incentive and carrot for teams to actually progress. And I think for those teams, you know, anyone who does well in the Tachin Cup, and we'll give them a bit of a bounce when they go back training for the National League next year. So I think it's the onus is on the management teams, the players and the county board to back their counties in the Tachin Cup because there's definitely a benefit for it.
Yeah, if you didn't hear the draw, New York have that novelty of playing a non-Connacht opposition for the first time in championship history. They were paired with Offaly in the Tachin Cup quarterfinal draw. That's next weekend. So Carlow, a big win against Tipperary. That was a great win for them. They've got a home tie against Westmeath. Northern section for Manaw at home to Cavan. Leitrim on home turf again for the visit of Sligo. Leitrim might fancy that.
Yeah, they will. They've been on a bit of a run since that. Andy Moore obviously came in with fresh ideas and with a new panel there to work off. I think Cavan are probably the standout team there and everyone's favourites to win it. But I, as I said, I think that carrot of getting to Croke Park, I mean, and playing in a Thousand Cup semi-final live on TV, I mean, all these counties, you know, they've really good players. We just don't get to see them enough. So this is a real, you know, window of opportunity for them to show what they can do. And as I said, it is a natural step for players to embrace it and try and develop the squad that they have and get better, and with a view to maybe getting another bounce then going into next year's National League.
Absolutely. And the carrot of Croke Park is there dangling in front of them. Thanks very much for joining us, Barry Cal, the ex-Dublin footballer. A couple of texts before we leave you. I was in Clonus yesterday, off a game of football to watch. Derry deserved the win. They were the lesser of two evils. It was a wake-up call Donegal needs, says a disgruntled Donegal fan. Myself and my wife went to the Six Nations in February. Pretty chaotic when we arrived. Security look clueless, only going to the stadium during the anthems, having aimed to be there 2 hours before kickoff. Wow. But to put it another way, I was in Stade de France for the rugby in February. It was superbly organised. Caroline in Galway. We hope you had a really good time. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Kenny. Back again tomorrow night at 6 o'clock for Game On. Thanks for Alan Cawley as well to being in studio. Tara Kumar is next. Bye.
RTE 2FM. Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.